High above us, we saw 8 vapour trails showing 2 separate 4-engine bombers heading south. These were B-29 bombers, or Bini-jukus, as the Japanese called them. They had been seen going north earlier that morning. Then they suddenly altered course and came back over Nagasaki. This manoeuvre was enough to send us wildly dashing for the air raid shelters. To dig our own graves with a view to being shot by the Japanese was one thing, but to be killed by our own allies was far too galling. In the shelters, we prayed that there would not be a direct hit. A couple of POWs did not bother to go into the shelters, staying on the surface and crouching on the ground in the shadow of the barrack huts. They were gazing at the sky, watching the approaching vapour trails. One of them shouted to us that 3 small parachutes had dropped. There then followed a blue flash, accompanied by a very bright magnesium-type flare which blinded them. Then came a frighteningly loud but rather flat explosion, which was followed by a blast of hot air. Some of this could be felt even by us as it came through the shelter openings, which were very rarely closed owing to the poor ventilation. The explosions, we heard, seemed to be 2 in number, and this puzzled experts when later we were being debriefed. One possible explanation is that the second sound was a giant echo from the surrounding hills. All this was followed by eerie silence. Then an Australian POW stuck his head out of the shelter opening, looked around, and ducked back in, his face expressing incredulity. This brought the rest of us scrambling to our feet and a panic rush to the exits. The sight that greeted us halted us in our tracks. As we slowly surveyed the scene around us, we became aware that the camp had, to all intents and purposes, disappeared. Mostly of wooden construction, the wood had carbonized and turned to ashes. Bodies lay everywhere, some horribly mutilated by falling walls, girders, and flying glass. There were outbreaks of fire in all directions, with loud explosions recurring as the flapping, live electric cables fused and flared. The gas mains had also exploded, and those people still on their feet ran round in circles, hands pressed to their blinded eyes or holding the flesh that hung in tatters from their faces or arms. The brick-built guardroom had collapsed, and the dead guards lay almost naked in a circle around the unlit stove. We could suddenly see right up the length of the valley, where previously the factories and buildings had formed a screen. Left behind was a crazy forest of discoloured corrugated sheets clinging to twisted girders. Burst water pipes shot fountains of water high in the air. The steel girders stood like stark sentinels, leaning over a series of concrete tennis courts that had once been the floors of factories. But most frightening of all was the lack of sunlight. In contrast to the bright August sunshine that we had left a few minutes earlier, there was now a kind of twilight. We all genuinely thought for some time that this was the end of the world.